You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to talk all about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Can you believe it, Mike? They are over 30 years old now.
They're still teenagers, though. How does that work?
In comic books, they have the Archie syndrome.
Well, they were Archie book for a little while, so yeah.
They definitely that makes were. Sense.
They well, it's all were. That. It's all about the ooze.
It is the ooze. It just keeps them teenage. You know, I technically think I'm still a teenager.
Yes, well. In the brain.
Too bad my body doesn't agree with that. Well, that's a whole nother episode. That's called Getting Up in Years by ESO.
Yes.
So how are you this week, sir?
I am fine. Cowabunga! We're talking turtles, baby.
We got our pizzas. We got our shields. We got our swords and our nunchucks. We are ready. Do you have your mask on?
I have my mask on, yes, but which color am I?
Aha, that's a good point. So it's going to be awesome, and we got a great crew to talk all about it, and we'll get with them in a little bit.
We should also point out we're not reviewing the new movie.
Oh, no.
This is for those people who are joining us and going, oh, I don't want spoilers or whatever. We're not. Mike and I haven't seen the movie. I don't know if our panelists have seen the movie or not. I think a couple of them have, but regardless, we're going to be talking all about the franchise as a whole and our feelings about it and all that and our like growing up with it, et cetera, et cetera. So this is more of an overview of the Turtles, not just a review of the movie.
Exactly. We're going to talk, you know, everything from the Eastman Laird era up, you know, to the cartoons, to the toys, to the original series of movies. We're going to go all through there. So it should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
But of course, we want to hear from you guys. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. All right. We do have another loss on our hands. So we're going to touch real briefly about the loss of Muhammad Ali, who was the greatest.
Yeah, there's no way we can, you know, I mean, even in the geek community, I mean, he was that big of a pop culture icon. Even for those of us who never actually saw him fight live or heard his initial interviews, et cetera, you couldn't grow up in this country and in the world, really, without hearing about Muhammad Ali and what he did in the ring and what he did outside the ring. He was a champion, the people's champion prior to The Rock. I think, in fact, that he bestowed that moniker, the people's champion, on The Rock and said, you can have it now. Obviously, you know, most geeks know him for, you know, fighting Superman on that big, huge Treasury edition of DC Comics, Ali versus Superman. And because I saw a lot of people posting that in my feed over the weekend. And, you know, I mean, he was a sports figure, but he was so much more than that. We saw some really great tributes from people. I have to point out one in particular that I thought was particularly moving by a friend of the station, Alex Autry, who was talking about how he had never seen him fight. He had never seen in interviews. I mean, he was too young to experience Ali at his peak. Yet when he was watching the opening ceremonies for the 96
Olympics.
96 Olympics, yes, that were here in Atlanta. He was not there personally, but he was watching them in Decatur. They had it on a big screen. There was a public gathering so that people all around could watch the opening ceremonies. And you know, there was a big mystery as to who was going to light the flame. And even money, because it was in Atlanta, even money that it was going to be Hank Aaron, even though his Olympic cred is not quite there. He is probably the biggest athlete in Atlanta history. So everybody was expecting to see Hank Aaron. And when it was revealed that it was Muhammad Ali, the crowd both there and otherwise went crazy. And, you know, I mean, that was the impact that Ali had when you saw him. And look, he wasn't, for the last 10, 20 years, he hasn't been his best. I mean, I think he's been plagued by age and damage done. But he's still, you know, he still held himself with dignity. And he always did. Well, I say always. I mean, he had that mouth on him, right? I always think of him, whenever I think of him, I think of that clip where he's like, "I'm a bad man." I just think like, and
I am the greatest.
Yeah. I mean, this guy was basically, I mean, telling everybody, you know, he was the greatest and everybody else was, inferior, at least in the ring and even outside a little bit. And he would back it up too.
Oh yeah. He floated like a butterfly and stung like a bee.
He was crazy. I mean, he was in fights that, you know, were just have huge monikers, like the fight of the century or the super fight or
the thrill in Manila,
the rumble in the jungle, you know, like a huge feud against George Foreman, who most people know as the guy that has the grills.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very much so. And it's interesting for me, my biggest memories of Muhammad Ali, of course, I did get to see some of his fights because a lot of times they showed him on ABC TV, and his biggest, you know, spokesman for him, of course, was Howard Cosell.
Yeah, they had a love-hate relationship, those two.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And his interviews and his calling of the fights were always what I remember the most about Muhammad Ali, other than, of course, the DC comic Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. He was definitely an American icon, and definitely one that for the history books, a lot of his stances on Vietnam as well as race issues are stuff of legend. People really need to read all about those because he was an important figure in a lot of those battles. He literally fought against the U.S. Supreme Court and won. That's a battle.
He did. And also, you have to remember, he did go to jail for a while for disobeying the draft. He went because he did not believe, of course, when after he converted to Muslim, and he basically became, a conscious observer. And he basically would not go into the draft. And he was put into jail because of it.
Yeah, that's why he fought against the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, exactly. And
he won. So
yes,
this is a guy that went toe to toe with the biggest names out there, and you know, there was a very, very few battles, both in the ring and out, that he lost. And unfortunately, he lost a big battle this weekend, but. He's another one that will live on in infamy because he's Muhammad Ali, he's Cassius Clay, he's the greatest. That's all you really need to say, the greatest. I mean, how amazing is that? All you have to do is say he's the greatest and everybody knows who you are.
His fights are up on YouTube. You can check them out. And it's just amazing to see him go. And his battles in the ring, but his battles outside of the ring, like Mike was saying, were amazing. He was, along with Michael J. Fox, one of the biggest spokesmen for Parkinson's disease, for the fight against it. And it was just amazing to see the awareness that both of them brought to it. And it's just over the years, his bravery with that alone, you know, not being afraid to be in the public, to be had to, you know, shy away from it. And it was just amazing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he'll be missed, and he has a huge legacy behind him, and there will not ever be anyone like him again.
Nah, not at all.
This here's the story of Cassius Clay, who changed his name to Muhammad Ali. He knows how to talk, and he knows how to fight. Contenders were beat out of sight. Sing Muhammad, Muhammad Ali. He floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee. Muhammad, the black Superman, who calls to the other guy. Ali, catch me if you can.
Hey guys, are you looking for a new podcast to listen to? Something a little on the geeky side, but lots and lots of fun with some crazy dudes? Well, have I got something for you. It's called the Vitamin Geek Podcast. I'm the host, Corey Keelan, and I'm here with my friends Eric Williams.
What's up?
Patrick Sykes.
Greetings, everyone.
And Michael Zippy Miller.
Hey there.
We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. Horror movies, science fiction. We love Star Wars. Who doesn't love Star Wars? If you don't like Star Wars, get the hell off of here. Check us out, man. Vitamin Geek Podcast, right here on the ESO Network.
It's all part of the plan.
Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go, 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 go.
Gonna rock the town without being seen. Have you ever seen a turtle get down? Slamming and jamming to the new swing sound. Yeah, everybody must move. Vanilla is filled with the new jack groove. Gonna rock and roll the place with the power of the ninja turtle bass. Iceman, you know I'm not playing. Devastate the show while the turtles are saying.
Ninja, ninja, rap. Ninja, ninja, rap. Ninja, ninja, rap.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man. I just bought it.
All right, kids, it's time to get on your gear and get ready to talk all about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And we got a great crew to talk all about it. Let's go ladies first, and still tied up in the geek seat, let's welcome Tacoma Sanchez.
Hey.
Hey, how's your week been up here on the station?
It's been pretty good thus far. I can't complain too much. The rain could kind of stop, but otherwise I'm good.
Well, you know, we want you to feel at home, you know. Bringing weather systems up into space is always a good thing.
Dour, like my mood.
Exactly. Exactly. Hopefully JD hasn't been too, you know, rambunctious with you. And of course, returning to the show, we have the Phantom Troublemaker.
Hey, Phantomaniacs.
Welcome back, sir.
It's been a while. I don't know how long it's been.
God, I think it's too over long. A year. It's way too long, man.
Yes, absolutely too long. I agree with that.
And it's great to hear you. How's everything been?
Everything is going fantastic. The Needless Things podcast, which is available on needlessthingssite.com, iTunes, and Stitcher, is trucking right along. And patreon.com/phantomtroublemaker has got some backers, and everything for May is getting shipped out tomorrow.
Excellent. That is awesome. I'm real happy to see how good you guys are doing over there.
Hey, you started this.
No, you're the one who walked up to us and said, hey, I want to be on a podcast.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, you know what? It wasn't even that. It was Mrs. Troublemaker. You know, she knew Bobby and she was like, you should go over and talk to that guy just, you know, about stuff. And I was like, what is an award winning writer like Bobby Nash going to want to talk to me about? But she encouraged me to go over there. And in talking to him, I met Faber and then I think, Gordon, you came over a little bit later, but eventually you guys were like, hey, so you like Doctor Who? You want to come on a show? And that was that.
There's enough blame to go around, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It goes all around the station.
Yeah.
I think that's why your wife gives me a dirty look every time I see her.
Almost it's like, certainly.
It's your fault I don't have him around all the time. You created the creature. But it is really awesome to have you back up here, sir.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back, and I'm thrilled to be talking about our topic.
And last but not least, Mr. Sean Reed's back with us.
Howdy. I stole that, and then I need a cool, like, Phantom's got Phantomaniacs, so what do I have, Death Pawns? Can I use that?
Sure.
Is that to go with Death Pod? Like, hey, Death Pawns.
Well, you could just beam them up with your Green Lantern rings or something.
Right. I'm gonna workshop that. I need a better what is Brutus the Barber Beefcake's fans called?
He has fans.
Did he really have fans?
he has me.
5 minutes in.
Yeah. I was working on that. I was working more on the Brutus joke than I was anything else. So hello. Hey, thanks for having me back. I have now hijacked everything. so I apologize for that.
Awesome. Oh, exactly. Turtles.
Turtle talk. All right. When were you guys introduced to the Turtles? Because they've been around. It's over 30 years now.
I feel that I was born with the Ninja Turtles. I mean, for 30 years, I technically was. I was born in 84, and I just kind of grew up with them.
That's the year I almost graduated.
But they're just something I can't even remember the first time that I actually watched the Ninja Turtles. I just remember watching it obsessively.
Awesome. So you were introduced mostly with the cartoons then?
Primarily the cartoons. And then it wasn't until I got older that I started to look into the comic books and into the older history of it.
Gotcha. No, that totally makes sense. What about you guys? What about Sean or Phantom?
Mine's not going to surprise anybody. I found them through the toys.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I was collecting at the time. I never stopped collecting toys. I never had that period where I was like, oh, I'm in high school now and I need to pay attention to girls and stuff. I was always kind of like, even on the sly, collecting stuff. And I remember the first time I saw the four turtles in the store and just loved them. They reminded me a lot of He-Man figures, but they were even crazier. And then from there, the toys hit before the cartoon came out. The cartoon came out, and honestly, and I know this is not going to make me popular, but hey, not much I do does. I was never a fan of the cartoon. I don't get me wrong. I watched it, but it was a little too silly. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's actually something that the creators talked about later on, was the fact that they felt that the cartoon was too silly based off of what it was that they'd originally had as their concept.
We have to give it credit, though, because, I mean, it's gotten the turtles where they are today. So I don't.
It has. And the whole reason that they made the cartoon the way that they did was because their target audience was between 4 and like 12 years old. I mean,
for sure.
Well, for the cartoon, yes. Not for the original comic book at all.
No.
But without that cartoon, we probably wouldn't be sitting here talking about the Ninja Turtles now, because it was a toy and cartoon empire. And that later on, I discovered the comic and I was like, oh, I like these turtles. These work for me.
Oh, very much so. All right, Sean, go ahead.
I got into it with the cartoon.
Really? Okay.
The toys kind of, I feel like they both hit for me about the same time. Mm-hmm. And I saw it and I thought it was crazy. And it did one thing that absolutely was guaranteed to hook me every time. It made my parents look at it and go, what in the world is that? And that, like, if you wanted to get a young Sean interested in your property, have his parents think that it's the weirdest thing in the universe. And that's like total bait. Like, I'm going to go and I want all of it. So, having grown up on He-Man and G.I. Joe and Transformers, as soon as I saw the cartoon, I said, I need to have these toys, like these figures, I need to have them. And so we ran off. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we had Hills Department Store was the big place. And it was like, I've got to get to Hills. I need all of these toys. And actually, I can say that of all the toys I've collected over my entire life, the only things that I have managed to keep from when I originally got them are my four turtles. I still have Leo, Mikey, Raph, and Don.
What?
their weapons are hit or miss, and every time I go to Jolanta, I'm always frantically scraping to try to find new weapons to replace them because they didn't survive so well. But yeah, I've managed to keep those four. Everything else I have, I've since, other than my Power Rangers, I've since gone back and bought again. But those four I've maintained, and they were just so much fun. Everything about the cartoon was silly, and then it introduced me to a whole other genre of comics that I wasn't even aware was out there. Once I learned, you know, other people that were familiar with them, like, oh, well, if you like the cartoon and the toy, you should really check out the comic because it's a totally different thing. And then I checked out the comics and I was like, my mind was absolutely blown that there's this whole other world of comics out there. There's this sort of that really they were kind of my introduction to what I would consider the indie comic scene and that, you know, the world beyond Justice League and Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Definitely see that. What about you, Mikey?
The first time I ever saw a Turtles comic was in, I'd say 1980. It was either late 86 or it was probably late 86, maybe earlier 87, but somewhere in there. And I had been, that was around the time where, and traditionally a lot of folks that are like myself that are really into comics, but we take a break around the high school graduation, early college years, et cetera, et cetera. And that was what time period we're talking about here. But I remember I went to a comic store in Worcester, Massachusetts. And this is when, like 86 and 87, and it was when the indie scene was really booming, like starting mm-hmm. to really flourish. Like, I mean, you had the Turtles, and just in New England area, you had the Turtles and you had the Tick. And then I think the Crow was it was around that time, maybe a couple years later, but a lot of other things. I remember particularly that visit, I walked out with two comics. One was Sandman number one, before it was Vertigo, or maybe was it Vertigo?
No, it was just DC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then The Shadow, the reboot, the DC's reboot of The Shadow.
Oh, Howard Chaykin's version.
Yes. And, awesome. But I was looking at all the comics and looking at particularly indie comics, because I think this is the first time I'd really seen a bunch of indie comics as well. And I was over there looking at it, and unfortunately, this is like 2 years after their debut. So their success is already there, and they're not standing out on the shelf. I see the Turtle book, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but then I also see next to it Miami Mice. I see next to it something Radioactive Hamsters, or there was another one, right?
Yeah, pre-pubescent Radioactive Hamsters or something
like
that.
And then there was a bunch of other ones that were trying to catch the same wave, you know, as the Turtles. Mm-hmm. And so I really couldn't – I was like, what is all this nonsense? And I just kind of said – and I just said, you know what? I don't have time for that. So I dismissed them. I never saw the cartoon, the early cartoon. And although I never really got back to it because it always seemed kind of confusing to me because they were with they started with Mirage and then they went to Image and then they went to Archie and then they had a book and Archie and at Image at the same time and then they went to DreamWorks or Dream whatever that one was
Dreamwave.
That's Transformers comics. Yes. That ultimately got very confusing.
So did the Image series. If you guys have ever looked at the Image series of the Ninja Turtles comic books, it's out there.
Didn't they briefly have a stint
on Dark Horse too?
Yes. I don't know about that actually, but it was all a mess. But I will say that I did around 2003 because they came back to Mirage and mm-hmm. that's when Peter Laird took over as the main guy. Like, I'm going to do a Turtles book because Kevin Eastman had gone his own way to do heavy metal and be with Julius Strain and spend his time doing that. So
I like how you say that like it's a profession. To be with Julius Strain. Which granted, it seems like it was.
I don't blame him at all for either.
He made it into a career for a short period of time.
Yes, he did.
So heavy metal 2000.
So I rediscovered them. I actually just started reading them in 2003 and really getting into them as a comic. And Of course, as a small publisher, they are in some ways my heroes. I mean, this is what we all strive for. You know, two guys from, you know, from New England, not very far from where I'm from, put this thing together and boom, like it's just, I think they're the most successful indie creators of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I would have to agree with that. Yeah.
Well, it definitely paved the way, as you mentioned, you know, as you were seeing all the other books and The Crow coming along. Mm-hmm. I think The Crow being able to turn into the larger property that became the movie, the TV show, and all of that, a lot of that came.
The curse.
Well, yeah. But I think a lot of the indie comics that got picked up for other media, you'd have to look at Eastman and Laird and what they did with the Turtles as kind of laying the blueprint for that and really opening the door to creators that otherwise would have never even gotten the time of day from a movie or TV studio.
Well, exactly.
I think that's absolutely true.
For me, it was interesting because I had seen like number one on the shelves back in the 1984. And I was like, oh, that's too silly. I don't want to pick that up.
Yes.
Boy, do I regret that now. But it was funny because it was just like, yeah, even the guy who ran the comic shop that I went to was like, oh dude, you got to pick this up. It's actually pretty fun. They look funny, but it's really serious and it's pretty kick ass. And it's like, nah, I took a look at it, thumbed through it. I was like, nah, no one will ever want to read this. And boy, I was stupid on that one.
Well,
but it was interesting though, because I came back to it probably about 2 years later because by this time I was already reading Dave Sim's Cerebus. I found out that Cerebus was actually doing a crossover with the Turtles.
Yep.
And that was the first time I picked up a Turtles book.
Oh, nice.
And I still have to this day, I have that issue.
I wonder if that is, if not the first, if that's a very, very early instance of independent creators doing that kind of crossover.
I think probably it was, because that was actually Cerebus's first appearance outside of his comic, because this is predates even when he appeared in Spawn.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that may be, because for a while, I feel like there was that, like, it just became a trend. You had Judge Dredd, Batman, Spawn, Batman, even the Amalgam universe for a brief period, but
But that was at least 6-7 years later.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this may have been one of the first... real crossovers from completely different properties that weren't even owned by the same publishing house.
Mm-hmm. And that had to lend some legitimacy to this silly idea of these turtles, these ninja, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Just sounds funny when you say it. And the concept seems ludicrous, but yet if you've got Dave Sim kind of going, you know what, it's this issue 8, let's give these guys attention. I'm going to help these kids out. I mean, that's a big thing.
Well, exactly. And Dave was, of course,
because he was already, Dave Sim was already like Dave Sim then. I mean, he was already.
Yeah, because Cerebus had been being published for 10 years by this point.
Well, and it was a smart move on Dave Sim's part because, you know, if you weren't a crusty old white guy, you probably weren't reading Cerebus. So it gave him the opportunity to introduce younger readers to his character and maybe draw them over.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
Here's something real silly about how I found the Ninja Turtles comics. I found Mirage. I don't know what year it was, but Mirage produced colorized versions, like really nice, slick paper. They reprinted the original comics, and they did, I think, 4 volumes of the original story arc that went from the introduction of the Turtles to, I think it went up through when they met the Outroms. But anyway, the colorized versions were what I found first, and then they reprinted black and white volumes, original editions, and they did everything, all the Mirage stuff up through Tales of the Turtles. And like an idiot, I got rid of the color ones because I was like, oh, those color ones are BS. I got the black and white stuff now. This is cool. But that original Turtles story, I had no idea that technically was a crossover as well. because the parody element, and it's funny because you read that first issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and it's very serious. It's not funny. It's not
not at all.
There are parody elements to it. However, the turtles, while this is not officially true, were created at the same time as Matt Murdock.
Yes,
became Daredevil.
Yeah, they've got a lot of parallels in their stories.
The, yes. Well, exactly, because the ooze that created them was supposed to be the radioactive stuff that hit Matt Murdock in his eyes.
But I didn't know. I had never read a Daredevil comic at that point, and I'll tell you honestly, I'm not even sure that I was aware of Daredevil when I read that first Ninja Turtles comic. So I didn't pick up on that, and I reread the first couple of issues before we recorded tonight. And when that happened, I was like, you know, this is really funny. It triggered like a memory. I was like, when I was
like, ding, ding, ding.
Yes, well, well, that's exactly what it was. I saw that panel where the canister hits the kid in the eyes,
and it falls and breaks. Yeah,
exactly. And I remembered thinking when I was younger, they devoted a whole panel to that. That guy is probably going to come back later. Because I didn't
know. He's going to be a big deal.
Right. And then he never shows up again.
He's going to be somebody someday.
Right, right.
I recently, I know we're going to, you know, a lot to talk about with the movies and the cartoons and everything, but I have to say I just read the first 11 issues in a collected form over the past week to prepare for this as well and reread it because I had read the first, I think, story arc, but I hadn't gone that deep. And the first 11 issues, those are the 11 issues plus a couple specials that Eastman and Laird did together. After that, they kind of, you know, worked separately. But man, that first year or so of the Turtles is magical. I mean,
yes,
both of them working on the art, cause you know, they always get asked which one wrote it and which one drew, but they both did everything. And their style is so, the art is, I think this is not really mentioned that much, but the art is fantastic.
Just the art, the storytelling.
Right.
Like it's really smart storytelling.
Yes. Well, the layout of the panels and how clear everything is, like these guys, holy cow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, effort.
I know. They really, you know, I mean, they were inspired by Miller and I think he says a couple of other independent, because I think Eastman's more of an independent guy. But you can definitely see some Robert Crumb influences on some of the work as well. Mm-hmm. And Dave Sim and everything like that. And it's just, but it's, I mean, it's, I was stunned by some of these two-page spreads, these single-page covers. They're just exquisite. And I'm like, wow, I don't think these guys really get as much notice for like just these their books stuff. Being really yeah. good looking. And I think that's what the big seller was too. I mean, when they came, yes, the idea was silly, but then you read it and you're like, man, these books are good.
Oh, the whole first Shredder storyline was awesome. And then when they actually met Krang.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it goes off on this weird tangent. All of a sudden they're in space and it's so bizarre. The turns it proved that this book could do anything. Like it could take place anywhere, anytime, on any planet, and they were still going to have fun. And it was still, you still cared about the characters.
I loved how the little robots, looked like Ultron almost, the heads.
Oh, the mousers?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that really made this appealing and made me want to seek out other independent comics is that they did have that sort of zine like quality to it. Like, man, this is just really good pen and ink, but it also looks like it was printed on a photocopier. And so it was impressive in a way that it made it feel accessible. Like as someone that was doing a lot of art at the time that was living kind of in a comic book world, it made it so that I looked at it and I was like, maybe I could do my own comic. Like,
right.
They're doing this thing.
I might have the resources to do this. I can't make America, but this is attainable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like I can come up with something like this, and I can draw this, and you know, with enough practice, I can come up with an understanding of storytelling well enough that I can do what these guys are doing.
I can do my black belt hamsters. Come on.
Right. Well, and it's not taking anything away from what they were doing. I don't want to make it sound like, well, these guys could do it. Anybody could do it. It was really just it was one of those things where you started to really feel like, as a fan of comic books and a fan of sequential art and storytelling, it was something that you didn't have to go out and – you know, pitch to Stan Lee himself to get a job working in comics. Yeah. That this was a model of, these guys are doing something that I love to do. This gives me hope as far as, like, if they can do this, perhaps I can follow in their footsteps down the line.
Mm-hmm. See, and I've always had a penchant for indie comics anyway. I grew up not necessarily reading a lot of comics, but I picked up on them much later on when I was in probably my middle or high school years and kind of continued on with that. But I've never had a draw to the Captain Americas, the Marvels, the DCs. It's always been the nitty gritty and the I can do anything and the almost like dirty quality of independent comics, where you're just kind of getting together and you're putting everything you've got into it. And that's really what the Ninja Turtles were, is they sat down, they drew up a sketch real quick. The other one went, well, let's do this. And then they just kind of rolled with it. And they were able to make an entire franchise out of less than $2,000. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
They got lucky and smart, you know, very early on, because they got that deal with, it was Playmates, right? The first... toys?
Yes.
Yeah, Playmates did. Yeah. Well, I mean, they always had the license.
I was going to say, they did all of them except for one series, I think.
Yeah, wow. NECA did a series of the original comic book Turtles,
yeah,
which are the best Turtles figures ever still. But yeah, Playmates has maintained that license since the beginning.
And so that, of course, you know, propelled them to superstardom. Now, I wasn't aware of it if it happened, but I'm curious as to whether or not there was any blowback when the cartoon started, with people reading the book going, this is not, they dumbed it down. They made it silly, you know.
If there had been an internet at the time, then yes, I'm sure there would have been. But without the convenience of the internet, I mean, I'm sure there was. I'm sure people that were fans of the comic were disappointed. But that, I mean, they didn't have a forum to express it. So I don't think it really, you know, it wasn't much of an impact, which, boy, weren't those better times.
Well, and I do remember people that knew, people a few years older than me, you know, like when I got into high school, that were like, well, if you really like the Ninja Turtles, then you need to check out the comic. Like a real, like there was that, the real fans, you know, street cred thing that was like, you need to be reading the comics. And so, being an impressionable kid desperate to fit in, I absolutely was like, okay, well, I'll seek that out. And then I was super glad that I did. And I was like, okay, well, these people were probably jerks, but they were also not wrong.
On a semi side note, have any of you been reading the newest series of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I have not, because IDW's handling of licensed properties is not always awesome. So I've been very hesitant.
The only thing I read was the Turtles and Ghostbusters crossover that they did last summer.
Well, a spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't read it. They actually kill off Donatello.
Oh, and I did know that. Yes.
Yeah, they totally kill off Donatello, who was my absolute favorite, naturally. Funny story, I actually crushed the hopes and dreams of my 5-year-old cousin. I was over at my cousin's house one day, and I was talking to her son, and he was a big Ninja Turtles fan. So we were talking about Ninja Turtles. It was great. And then I'm like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Did you know that Donatello dies? And he just went white and started bawling his eyes out.
Oh, girl.
I'm sorry. Like, the nerd took over in me. I was like, let's talk about everything in Ninja Turtles. Oh, wait, you're 5. I shouldn't tell you that character dies.
But you need to go back and tell him that he came back in the next issue.
Yes. Yeah. I should probably do that.
You might want to follow up.
Because because his whole world is still falling apart right now. So if now, it wasn't summertime, his grades would be suffering.
So now we know why the kid is going into therapy.
It was hilarious to me after the fact.
I'm like, sure.
Even I was like, oh gosh, that was really, really socially awkward, even by my standards.
Well, that sort of thing is part of why I'm not a huge fan of IDW stuff, because they took G.I. Joe. And granted, they've got Larry Hama's ongoing Real American Hero, which is great, but their main G.I. Joe title was just miserable. I'm not a big fan of using internet terms, but Grimdark. Ugh. Yeah. So, yeah, I have not checked out IDW's Turtle stuff. So if anybody's listening and it's great, let us know.
Yes, we'd definitely love to hear it.
I'm definitely trying to. It is weird because, you know, now that I've read the first 11 issues, I'm kind of like, where do I go from here? And, you know, you put up Turtles online or whatever as far as books and collections, and it is kind of a mess. You have to kind of sift through a bunch of stuff. Now, IDW has reprinted a lot of the Mirage stuff, so I would say definitely start there. But, you know, where you go from there is you know. I mean, like I said, the original two creators after issue 11 worked separately on separate issues until I think they came together in issue 50. And then that's it. They haven't been, you know, together on a Turtles thing for. I mean, I'm sure they still look over and consult when it comes to, you know, well, cartoons Eastman, and movies and what. But
Eastman sold his shares over to Peter in, I think it was like 2009. I think
he
sold his rights to it. So he could buy. I was going to say
so he could buy Julie Strain.
I almost said that.
That's messed up, guys.
it was so he could buy heavy metal, actually.
Yeah.
And then he still owns, which has got a resurgence recently because of, I guess, it's being edited by Grant Morrison now. So,
yes.
So it's kind of cool to see that magazine come back into prominence. But yes, you're right. And then something happened in 2009 or so where Nickelodeon took over.
Yes.
And with that, like, IDW got involved. And so since IDW's been involved, Kevin's back in with the Turtles, and he's the main creative force with the Turtles now. Peter's kind of not doing anything Turtle-related as far as I know.
Well, we've been talking mostly about the comics and such. Let's start getting into the toys, into the cartoons.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll tap.
So Phantom, you know, that's how you got into it. The toys are amazing because that's, you know, when I went to the store after saying, oh, nobody's going to read it and stuff, and going to the store and seeing how much merchandise there was.
Playmates licensed the rights to do toys prior to any cartoon being released. And it was massive. I mean, it was immediately huge. It's a very interesting thing that this kind of came out of nowhere with no support, because in the 80s, every toy line was linked to a cartoon at its launch. And the Turtles, you know, predated that hugely successful cartoon.
It almost did it the opposite.
And it is definitely the spiritual successor to the Masters of the Universe, because you got these wild characters with strange attributes. You had great backstories. Like, you would buy one of these figures, and first of all, you're getting a mutant turtle or a mutant warthog or rhinoceros, or later on dragons and kangaroos and bats and manta rays. I mean, they ran the gamut of the animal kingdom. This was one of the most creative and incredible toy lines that has ever been seen. And, you know, you got the file card. They were still doing file cards back then. And you got the story for each character. It was an amazing toy line. And Playmates, this led to them being able to nab the Star Trek license and have a very successful run for the first time ever with the Star Trek franchise. Because Star Trek had toy lines previously, but none of them had ever really gone anywhere. And that's how Playmates got it, was this Turtles license led to their success through the late 80s and early 90s. And to this day, Playmates is still making Ninja Turtle toys. And with the resurgence back in 2009, is the number one selling toy in all of the land.
Well, have the cartoons to thank a lot for that. And then the series of movies that they had.
Well, they had the original 80s cartoon. They had a cartoon in 2002 that was the animation is not great, but it took a little darker tone and kind of adapted the stories of the original comics a little more directly. And it's very good story-wise, animation-wise. To me, it leaves something to be desired. And then you have the modern cartoon that is just fantastic. It's probably a little, I don't want to say silly because it's not like the 80s cartoon, but it's kind of a modern kind of silly. But story-wise, it's incredible. David Tennant played Fugitoid.
Really?
Fugitoid, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Fugitoid, as you know, is a time traveler. So it was really funny seeing, you know, it's the Doctor, but he's a robot now, and he's hanging out with Ninja Turtles. And a lot of his mannerisms were very much like the Doctor. but it's one of the best cartoons on the air right now. They just wrapped, I want to say their third season. But they've done a really good job of incorporating the comics, the original cartoon, the movies, just different elements from everything into one cohesive story.
The original voice cast.
Mm-hmm.
They have Rob Paulsen is now a second turtle.
Yeah, he's Donatello, I think.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. And I believe that they just recently had a crossover episode where they did like a multiversal thing and they crossed over with the original turtles.
Well, so predating that though was Turtles Forever, which was a feature length. It was on Nickelodeon. It's not a movie, but it's a feature length cartoon, I guess, that incorporated every iteration of the turtles except for the newest one. It had the original cartoon turtles, the 2002 turtles, the comic book turtles, and it combined them all together in this insane time universe traveling story.
It didn't include the rubber suit turtles from the Power Rangers crossover that shall not be spoken of.
Mutations.
What do you mean, shall not be spoken of? That is amazing.
There's something to be said for mutations. Oh, that was, I'm not going to lie.
I remember watching that when I was younger. So,
if you want wacky Power Ranger style action from Ninja Turtles, they did a good job with that. Which it's by Saban, so that's all. That's all you should expect from that.
Yeah.
And it introduced the female turtle, whose name I can't remember. But
I was about to ask you about that.
Lisa was introduced in the original cartoon, actually.
Oh, was she? Okay.
Well, and there was talk of another fifth turtle who was actually – they drew up a concept sketch of him that was named after one of their comic book idols, and I'm drawing a blank on it. But
that was
– yes, that was supposed to be the supposed fifth turtle that may or may not be introduced later on that never was.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if the current cartoon introduced him, because they're really good with their turtle lore. Like, they know the history.
And I would be perfectly all right if Power Rangers in Space made an appearance on that cartoon.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Of course you would. And then Brutus Beefcake could come out as well.
Where's he could be the villain. Button? And then they... Oh, I am fanficking this up in my head right now.
Save it for September. But okay. Yeah, the cartoons have all been very successful. There's something magical about the turtles that people want to love them, because you can look at almost any franchise in the history of pop culture and there have been dark times. There have been mm-hmm. times where things were bad. You know, Batman has that. Spider-Man has that, but the turtles really haven't experienced a failure. I understand a lot of people hate the next mutation, but
we're going to have to take that with a grain of salt.
It was a successful show.
Well, I was thinking more like the third live action movie that they did.
Yeah.
I have seen none of the movies.
It's
but
not.
I understand. And some people have told me I haven't missed anything by not watching any of the movies. And then it varies.
Should be ninja kicked in the head.
I think missing whether or not you've missed anything by not watching the movies really depends on what it was that started you on the Ninja Turtles at first. Like, I started with the cartoon series from the 80s and 90s. So watching the movies was kind of one of those things that was a no-brainer for me. But coming from strictly into the comic books and then into the cartoon series and everything else, you wouldn't be missing anything unless that was really what your passion was about.
See, I enjoyed the first two movies, though. I thought they were fun.
I feel like the 1990 movie,
the first one was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It stands up as a good movie, regardless of whether or not you like the Ninja Turtles. It's a huge accomplishment for the Jim Henson Company, for one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the whole storyline of that movie is not necessarily entirely based off of the silliness of the comic or the cartoons, but it also still has some of the darker undertones from the comic books as well, like Raphael's whole troubled section and everything else that goes on.
But I also like what they did, the whole thing with Casey in that movie.
Oh yeah.
Was awesome.
Well, it's an adaptation of the comics. At the point that the movie was being scripted and produced, the cartoon had not taken off yet. They were basing that first movie off of comic book storylines, and it's almost exactly their original arc from the comics. And then the second movie, when that happened, it was cashing in on the popularity of the cartoon, and that's why they introduced. It's a little sillier, it's a little more fun, but still, I think a very good movie.
Yeah,
it has one of the finest performances of both Vanilla Ice and Kevin Nash.
Oh God!
Yep.
Don't leave
Kevin
out
Nash Ernie Reyes, is Super Shredder.
Don't leave out Ernie Reyes Jr.
Right, right.
Who is terrible in that movie? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
And then Ninja Rap holds a special place in my heart and will for the rest of my life. I may or may not still know most of those dance moves.
I hate to say it. My son does also.
High school cheerleader, Sean, that was how I ended up being a cheerleader, is because a friend of mine and I could do that entire dance. And that was the halftime performance song that the cheerleaders danced to. And we went to the coach and said, "Hey, watch this." And she's like, "Okay, cool. You can come to the games and be cheerleaders."
I am going to have to disagree with you and say that Turtle Power by Partners in Crime, that's crime with a K and a Y, from the original movie soundtrack, is the greatest Ninja Turtle oriented song of all time.
Oh,
and
no,
everybody listening should go and listen to that. Download it right now.
It's amazing. It is. I will totally agree. It is a better song than Ninja Rap. However, Ninja Rap just holds that special nostalgia place.
I understand. Well, Ninja Rap's easier to dance to.
It is. It is. They're way more interpretive to Turtle Power. Like, you got to. Yes. It's more of a lyrical piece, I think.
Turtle Power tells a story.
It's not your typical 4/4 on a downbeat. Anyway,
I think we're going off track here.
So the third live action movie was a big WTF. I don't know that we even need to discuss that.
Is
but
that
then
Turtles in Time.
Yes. It's pretty bad. Even though it brings back Casey and it brings back the original April O'Neil, it's not great.
Yeah, I think that was an excuse to just sell toy variants because it meant you got Samurai Turtles and it did Transformers movie.
They'd done that anyway. It was just them trying to
get more money for whatever it was that they could.
Yes, it was. It was a cash grab. But then we had the CGI Turtles movie.
Ah, I have not watched those, and I can't get myself to do it.
It's great. Patrick Stewart is the villain. Voice acting is phenomenal. April O'Neil is a ninja. Like, they actually took the character of April, and she's been training with Splinter, and it's
her damsel in distress.
Exactly. It's a great flick. It's really good, and it's early CGI. It's very, very well done for the time that it was done. It looks better than your average Nickelodeon cartoon today. It's not Jimmy Neutron, but it's really good. It's a good story, and it's independent of any other continuity. And it doesn't tell the origin over again. It's just, you know who the Ninja Turtles are. Here's a new adventure. I dig it. I love it.
Well, maybe I'll have to check it out then. I just, when I saw them come out, my old school brain kicked in and I'm like, no, I can't do it. Don't take my child.
Yeah, it's, well, and that's the thing about the new cartoon is again, it's that CG, and I am immediately resistant to anything that's not cell animation. But that's where we are now. And things like that last Green Lantern cartoon or Beware the Batman, like that's where everything is now. So if you want to enjoy your favorite pop culture stuff, you kind of have to adapt. And
exactly.
And it's been worthwhile with the current Ninja Turtles cartoon and with that feature film, because that was that is a different continuity from the current cartoon. It was a feature film that was released in theaters.
Yeah, it's kind of a standalone, right?
Yeah, it was very much its own thing.
Yeah, they released it. I had to go and look it up because I could not remember what it was called. But
it's
yeah,
just
I remember TMNT. Seeing it. Yeah, I remember seeing it in theaters. I went and saw it with a girl that I was dating, and we didn't date for much longer after that.
I have a lot of stories like that.
Because she did not appreciate the movie as much as I did. I saw it, and I was like, this is amazing. And then even going back and looking at the cast now, I cannot – like, yes, it was absolutely – crazy. I mean, Chris Evans as Casey, Sarah Michelle Gellar as April. You have Kevin Smith is in it. Patrick Stewart is the villain. Lawrence Fishburne is the narrator. And then just like the who's who of voice acting talent: James Arnold Taylor, John DiMaggio, Kevin Michael Richardson, Fred Tatasciore. Like, this is an amazing movie. Like, I'm probably going to go back and watch it. I had forgotten about it, so thank you.
That's pretty awesome. Well, you know, we've talked about the Turtles. We touched a little bit on Splinter, you know, because Splinter has always been a major character, and April comes in and out depending on which series you're watching or what comic you're reading. And the same thing with Casey. But we also have to talk about some of the villains that they've faced also. Shredder is, of course, the iconic one.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the ninjas that they fight.
We've got Shredder. Oroku Saki, Shredder, and the Foot Clan.
Yes.
And depending, like you said, depending on the continuity you're looking at, there are many different origins for how the various villains come about. They've gone a lot of different ways from telling the stories of how these mutations occur. And it's really just up to the storytelling. And that's actually one of the most interesting aspects of the Ninja Turtles. Is you have, you know, one of the fun things about it is seeing all of these mutated creatures. Like I said before with the toy line, you've got kangaroos and wolves and rats and whatever else. And some of them decide, well, everything comes from the same mutagen from TCRI or ooze or whatever you want to call it. You've got other ones that maybe something occurred naturally in the wild. You've got other ones, they're from another dimension. And honestly, there's really two that would be a podcast unto itself. But to me, that's one of the consistently entertaining aspects of the franchise, is seeing how these characters are introduced every time and how the people that are running the show at the time decide to bring them in. Like it's all up to storytelling. And that to me is, you know, we've talked about this over and over again here and on Earth Station Who, is how important storytelling is. And that if you're good at telling a story, the character doesn't even matter. Mm-mm. Like if you're telling an interesting story, then who cares if it's a rat or a mole or a dragon or whatever. And that's one of the magical things about the franchise. And maybe that kind of touches on what I said before about how successful it's been, is there's so many different ways to present these stories.
Well, exactly. That's where I was going with it, because how many different ways have they retconned Shredder into the different stories?
Well, Shredder's fairly consistent. I mean, granted, in the original story, he was the brother of Hamato Yoshi's opponent. And then, of course, you have the differences in Splinter. Sometimes he's a guy that turned into a rat. Sometimes he's a rat that turned into a big rat. And really, you know, I used to get bothered by that kind of thing. Like, well, why is Splinter a human that turned, like that was in the original cartoon. Hamato Yoshi was a human that got mutated into a rat. In the comic, mm-hmm. He was a rat that had watched his human master and learned ninjutsu. And you know what? It doesn't matter.
And I loved in the first movie when they showed that.
Yes, the puppet rat.
Yeah. Exactly, practicing the karate.
Beautiful scene. And all the baby turtles, Splinter. Oh, come on.
Cowabunga.
Yes. But
now, really, quick question.
You know, we know these characters and the way that they happen is just part of the fun.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead,
quick
Mikey.
Question regarding some of the bad guys. Rocksteady and Bebop, do they come – they're not in the – do they ever appear in the comic? Because I either haven't got to them yet in my reading of the original run.
Not
in the,
they're not from the Mirage comic.
No.
I was going to say, they didn't show up in the comic books until much later after the cartoon series, and they had been introduced in the cartoon series.
Gotcha. The Mirage comic, you had the Utroms, which are where Krang came from, except they were a whole race of beings instead of a singular being. You had the Triceratons, which the turtles found when they traveled between dimensions. Later on, they really got pretty crazy. You know, at one point they had, what was it, the Fanny Whacker?
Oh, God.
The rat that was the take on the Punisher.
Yes.
You know, they got pretty out there with their villains in that Mirage comic. And as to other stuff, you know, Dacoma, I think you mentioned the Archie comics, which were, they weren't adaptations of the cartoon, but they were based off the continuity of the cartoon. And I think they brought a lot of wild stuff in there. You know, they've, again, there's just so many ways to play with the franchise that I think aside from Shredder and probably the Utroms, there aren't, those are your two main villains, and they've done so much other stuff that you can kind of bring in whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well, and when you're playing with mutants, you really can, it really is like the sky's the limit. And that's one of the things that I loved Bebop and Rocksteady, just because it was like, man, we got these crazy turtles, we got a rat, and now we've got a pig and a rhino. I was like, it's like you said, it's the spiritual successor to He-Man, in yes. that you just got all this random stuff that weirdly all seemed to make sense.
Well, hell, those rhino and the pig actually ended up killing a turtle. Oops, spoilers.
for a little while.
Yes. He's almost dead.
Did any of you actually play the video games by any chance?
Yes.
Curiosity.
Yeah.
There's been a plethora of video games as well, and we haven't even touched on them.
Well, I remember the original arcade game.
That one's probably the best known and the most successful.
Then there was the NES one, which was an adaptation of it. But yeah,
I loved the original NES game that was almost like an action RPG where you switch between turtles. A lot of people hate that one, and it was very hard. But Donatello, who's my favorite, was the most powerful.
Yeah.
They've done tons of video games. Most of them are terrible.
But that one was really good, and it was actually one of the highest grossing NES games of the time, and it was also ranked as one of the hardest games as well. But I remember going to my cousin's house and playing it because they had it and I didn't.
And you would have – I think it was one of those games that predated the memory chip that you had to leave paused like overnight or while you went to school so you could come back to the same place.
Yeah.
You're like, don't touch the TV, Mom. Don't touch it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you left the TV on, it would burn the image into the screen.
Your Nintendo is still on and it's warm. Is there something wrong? No, I just can't turn it off ever.
I gotta save the game. It was training parents to not pick up the phone when you're on the internet. Like, it was before, like, what we were training our parents is, if I'm using something, don't touch it, because
it
can't be shut off.
Gets,
right.
If the dog is barking at it, whatever, just leave it alone.
Put a fan in there. Give me an ice pack. I actually got in trouble in high school. I went to a school summer camp. It was at Georgia Tech. I was very disinterested in the topics, and so I would just skip all of the required camp activities and go to the Georgia Tech Student Union where they had the Ninja Turtles game, and I would either watch people play or basically sit there and play until I ran out of quarters for the whole day. Like, it was just a constant repeat. I was like, this is amazing, and if this is what college is like, I'm going to love it. And that's not at all what college was like, and it's probably the only video game
that I have spent any time playing, any significant period of time playing, because for those of you that know me now, I don't own a game system, a game console. I don't play any video games at all. I'm like completely clueless in that whole
You're a freak.
Realm. Yeah. I got into programming, and then I was like, I don't want to play games. I want to write games or write things.
Yeah.
Anyway, other tangent.
I know. Well, I know we can keep on going, but we've got to start wrapping this. So any final thoughts on the Turtles? How would you introduce people to the Turtles? Would you do the new movies, or would you take them back to the cartoons?
No, I would stay away from anything that Michael Bay has put his stink on.
Oh, yes. Michael Bay.
I mean, he hasn't.
If it's somebody who genuinely like wasn't that familiar with the Turtles, I honestly would probably show them the 1990 movie. It's a great movie. It's got the puppetry is amazing. The turtles look amazing. They actually interact with the human actors. It's a good story. Like, that's a good movie.
It is. It's the perfect line between the two, between the original comic books and the 1990 series. And if it's something that they want to get into and go into some of the newer stuff, then it's a great catalyst for it. It's just a matter of how involved you think that person's going to be. But I completely agree. The 1990s movie is probably the best.
Awesome. And somebody younger, I mean, the current Nickelodeon cartoon, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the best things on the air. Matter of fact, I would put it over Star Wars Rebels.
Wow.
Oof.
Wow.
That's bold. That's a proclamation.
Wow.
Because I love me some Rebels.
I do too, but Ninja Turtles is more consistently entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Do you? Wow. I'm calling in the question how much you
now, love Rebels. I would put Gravity Falls over both of them.
Well, this is going down the tubes right now. So let's take a quick break. We want to hear from you guys at home. Write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get back in a moment with the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about one of her favorite geeky-related articles from the World of Warcraft movie premiere. Now, there was an article a while ago about Jamie Lee Curtis cosplaying with her family at BlizzCon, showing all of us that actors are real people too, and that they enjoy going to conventions with their families and even playing World of Warcraft. Now, that article, she dressed up like an undead Forsaken from the game. However, this past week, she attended the World of Warcraft movie premiere dressed as an orc, and even yelling out Leroy Jenkins, which is pretty hilarious all in itself. Curtis isn't in the new movie, but it is so fun to see actors who love the franchise and are enthusiastic about it and want to dress up for the movie premiere, where most people are in suits and dresses. Makes you wonder what other actors do incognito at cons, and if they dress up. There have been videos of Adam Savage and others that also do that at like Comic-Con, but it really makes you wonder how many more fanboys and girls in the entertainment industry are out there and all go to cons and do that. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Con!
Well, we are honored to be joined by Tara Fulbright of Kongregate. Welcome to the station, Tara.
Thank you.
Tell us all about Kongregate.
So Kongregate is a science fiction and fantasy convention that's going to be held in High Point, North Carolina. It is going to be July 15th through 17th.
What? It's not Geek Summer Camp?
Well, it is still Geek Summer Camp, but it's only a convention version of Geek Summer Camp.
Oh, man.
We are not an actual summer camp.
I was about to send my son there for the whole summer.
You know, there were a lot of people who, every time we went to another convention to promote us, tried very hard to send us their kids. I don't want anybody else's kids. I have mine. I'm good.
It is an unfortunate theme, but it's a cool one nonetheless.
Well, we thought it was going to be a very fun theme, and then it wasn't until, well, pretty much after we picked the theme and we'd gone places that we realized that, oh, wait, there is actually apparently real geek summer camps, and So we just really had to make it very clear that this is a theme.
Hold on for a second. Hold on. William, dude, I'm sorry, man. Unpack your bag. You're not going to High Point, North Carolina for the summer. All right. I have a 16-year-old who looks very disappointed now.
Crush the kid's dreams.
He's more than welcome to come for the weekend. We'll have lots of fun. Thanks.
Well, tell us how this is the third congregation that you guys have had. What? Tell us how it got started. What is the main sort of topics that you guys cover?
Sure. So we're mostly a literary convention, but we have guests in music and live performance and science and costuming, pretty much all of the genre that hits science fiction and fantasy. But what makes us different and kind of where we got our start is kind of twofold. So where we got our start is we looked around North Carolina, and there were a lot of really great conventions, a lot of very fun conventions, but a lot of them either seemed to be targeted towards a very young crowd, so a college-ish, just out of college crowd, or almost the first generation of fandom or the second generation of fandom type crowd. And we really wanted to start a convention that had opportunities for what we kind of called the geek with kids kind of group. So a lot of our kind of target audience is in that 30 to 50 kind of age range. And then we ended up, after our first year, kind of filling a niche around interactivity. So we started this kind of real focus on getting the fans interacting not just with the guests, but with each other. And so we do a lot more roundtable type discussions. We do a lot of game shows. We have a lot of workshops. And so it really gives the fans who come a chance to not just sit in the audience, but really feel like they're a part of the convention.
So it sounds like it's a convention for those who are young at heart.
Yes.
Gotcha. So what are some of the guests that you have lined up this year, or the programming that you have this year?
Sure. So our guests this year are, at least I think they're pretty amazing. So our guest of honor is Stephen Barnes. And Stephen is known for kind of having a very diverse aspect to his career. He's been an author. He's been a screenwriter or scriptwriter. He's also kind of a personal consultant and lecturer. So he has this really broad kind of experience to him. Kind of his most famous stuff is he's worked with Larry Niven. He's worked on things like Star Wars novels. So, I mean, he's really has this variety of kind of talent that he brings to us. And then our artist guest of honor is Lindsay Look. Now, Lindsay is really considered kind of this up-and-coming artist. Her work has been in Spectrum, which is kind of like the science fiction fantasy art book. And she's done work for Wizards of the Coast, and some of her covers have been through Penguin Books and Smirk and Dagger Games. There we go. And then we've got kind of our two special guests, which are completely different. We have Valentine Wolf, which is a musical group that is kind of gothic, ethereal, metal-ish. They have Sarah and Braxton have this wonderful combination of rock and electronic, and Sarah's voice and Braxton's upright electric bass. So it's this really unique kind of musical sound. And then we have AJ Hartley, and AJ is, in addition to being kind of an honest-to-goodness professor of Shakespeare, he's a New York Times best-selling author, and he's done everything from kind of young adult fantasy to steampunk. He's written Shakespeare adaptions to Shakespeare plays, And his most recent work that just came out is in partnership with Tom DeLonge of Blink 182. So I think that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you've got a sort of a well-rounded group of guests, and particularly good, like you said, of covering a lot of topics as well as getting, you know, fans interacting together. That kind of process. It sounds like, and also since it takes place in a hotel, I'm guessing that there's programming, you know, late at night, and it's kind of like is it one of those conventions that kind of doesn't end at night?
Well, yes and no. So we actually don't go because, well, we're all older and have kids. We like to go to bed.
Gotcha.
So actually the majority of our programming, our last panel for the most part ends at midnight. Now gaming goes a little bit longer. Gaming, we do have gaming, so like RPGs and board games, and that usually goes till about 2 a.m. But most of our programming, we ended about, the last panel is around midnight, and that was just because we found over the first 2 years that by the time 11 o'clock midnight came around, people were either headed to bed or headed to the parties. And so we said, you know what, let's let them go party, and then we'll have them come back Saturday morning bright and early and excited. And so our evening programming is a lot of music. We do a charity auction. We'll have a costume contest. That's where we do a couple of our game shows. So a lot of our evening programming pretty much kind of wraps up in that midnight time frame.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, what are some of the events that you're particularly looking forward to? Do you like to dress up? Do you like to do the costuming?
I do. Unfortunately, because I am the programming director for Kongregate, I don't dress up at this con.
Gotcha.
Because otherwise I would never have a chance to breathe. but I do look forward to our costume contest. I do look forward to where we work really well with a group called the 105th Squad, which is a costuming maker type group. They're actually really kind of connected in with us. And so they're doing an event called Iron Maker, where we'll have two teams of these costumers slash makers who will give a bunch of stuff, and we'll tell them, okay, you have to make a costume based on this theme with all of this stuff. And then about halfway through, we're going to throw a twist in and say, okay, now you have to do this. And they'll do a workshop kind of demo with all of the various things that they do, because they have electronic-y type people, and they have people who make armor, and they have people who sew, and it's a really a lot of fun.
Well, I was looking over at the website, and you have Hawaiian Shirt Friday, so I understand that's a great day for me, because I'm all about the Hawaiian shirts.
Mike, you live in nothing but.
I would if I could, but
yeah. We do. So our Hawaiian Shirt Friday is actually a tradition that started in honor of Aaron Alston. So Aaron Alston was a Star Wars author that was a dear friend of ours, and he was famous for his Hawaiian shirts. And he passed away shortly before our very first convention. And so we decided, as a way to honor him, we asked everybody to wear Hawaiian shirts on Friday. Well, that turned out to be so much fun that we decided, well, you know what, we want to do it again. But we still want to honor those who we have passed. So our Hawaiian Shirt Friday has kind of become a way for us to honor anybody that has passed in the last year.
Wow, that's an interesting take on it. I like that. Now that, you know, if I'm out with my Hawaiian shirt now, give me any crap or grief, I could just say, hey, I'm honoring people.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. It really does. Looking at the programming here, you guys do cover a large range of topics, and especially like things that, you know, for people who want to just like talk about fan stuff, you know, like, I mean, sure, there's the costuming, the partying as well, but you've also got some pretty decent programming, so you can have some serious discussions and getting to know people. I like that.
We do. I'm actually really excited because one of the two areas that we kind of focus on that I'm kind of excited about is science. And then fandom itself is its own kind of entity. And so our science panels, we have a whole bunch of real honest-to-goodness scientists who come. And one of my favorite panels that we do takes place at really late on Friday night, and we basically throw every scientist that we can think of on this panel, and we give the audience free rein. And so it becomes very silly, but at the same time, very fun, because we basically just let the audience kind of pick the brains of these scientists. And we've had everybody from folks who've worked on NASA to entomologist, there we go, the bug doctor, right. bug people. Yep. The bug people on this panel. And so it's a lot of fun. And then on the other side of that is this idea of fandom and how the geek world is becoming kind of more out there, kind of more accepted. And so we've got panels kind of talking about, what does it mean to be a geek? Do you wear your geekness on your sleeve? I mean, do you wear the Star Wars shirt when you go to work? And then at the same time, we've got one around the idea of, okay, well, a lot of us when we started in fandom felt like we were outcasts, or felt like we were very alone. And so what was that moment that you suddenly realized, hey, I'm not alone? And how did that help you? What did that bring to you? And what did that bring you into the fandom?
Yeah, and those are very good discussions. I definitely appreciate the fact that you've got a convention where fandom is a serious topic that people can discuss, because there's a lot of fans issues, as you said, things that started off as, you know, the few and far between were interested are now like all over pop culture, and there's been a lot of like growing pains with that.
So. Yeah, very much.
So, well, very cool. Well, it sounds like a great weekend. It is July 15th through the 17th in High Point, North Carolina. Tara, where can people go to find out more information about it?
They can go to www.con-greg8.com.
Awesome. And don't be fooled. It says Geek Summer Camp, but it's not someplace where you can just leave your kids.
Oh, no, trust me. He's looking really disappointed right now.
Well, it's not that they don't have any programming for kids, but
well, and actually, we have a whole kids track.
Yeah, so you can bring the kids.
We really do acknowledge that we've got kids and we have things for them to do.
So, well, thanks so much, and we'll definitely include a link to this on our show notes and encourage people to come out.
Wonderful! Thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Tara, for telling us all about Congregate, and definitely looking forward to that in July. But before that, there are some venues or some events that are happening in June where you can find ESO people, starting actually this weekend. This weekend is the Hookie Lao in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It is a tiki celebration of all things tiki, of all things Polynesia, of all things pop culture, as well as there's some rum tasting. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty fun. So I will be there, and I have a table. Cousin William Kilhorn will be there as well, friend of the station and author of Cryptozo. He will be there, and we will be selling our wares as well as partaking in some rum and just having a good old time. So if you are in the Fort Lauderdale area, if you are in a tiki, come down to the Hookie Lao, and we'd love to say howdy to you. Then a week or so after that is the June 24th. Speakeasy Electro Swing at the Red Light Cafe. And this month's theme is mythic. So prepare for some epic music as well as performances there. Of course, our good friend Q will be selecting the tunes that you all be dancing to. It's a great event. So that's the monthly Speakeasy Electro Swing theme there. And then also in June is June 25th to the 26th is Con Castaburus. Now that's in Huntsville, Alabama. It is a Doctor Who related event. If you are not familiar with the terminology, it's been going on for a few years now, and it's a pretty big deal. And Mike and I went there last year, and we had a blast. A lot of people from the Huntsville, of course, Birmingham, and actually down from Tennessee, as well as over from Atlanta. Got a lot of different folks there, and it was a really good time.
We had people as far as Illinois.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It is it's a pretty big event. I was kind of surprised at the attendance. And they've got a doctor. Doctor. They've got the Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker, there, who we've met before.
Of course, and don't forget, the Second Doctor's companion, Fraser Hines, will be there,
too. Very excited to meet Fraser Hines. I think I've been at some shows that he's been at, but our paths have never crossed. So definitely look forward to speaking with him or seeing him on panels and whatnot. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him. We'll be there, of course, representing Earth Station Who and Earth Station One. So we're going to be doing a few panels. I don't think that's been completely blocked out yet or scheduled, but I know that we're still working on that. But so that's a good time. So that is in Huntsville. And there's another event coming up around that same weekend in Birmingham, Alabama, which we'll tell you about in a little bit. But then the week after that, that is June 30th through July 3rd. And that is Convergence. That is in Bloomington, Minnesota. Convergence, we've talked about Convergence before because we've had some people on that have been there.
We had the great Lutzke on.
We did. And also, they're going to be there again because our good friends over at the Flopcast, none other than Kevin, as well as the mayor of Chickentown, are going to be at Convergence. That takes place in Bloomington, Minnesota, if I didn't say that already, but I think I might have. But in any case, it is a convention for fans of science fiction, fantasy, all media. It's a pretty big event. I even hear rumblings that friend of the station, Tim Price, might be there. That's about his area of the country now. So so definitely keep an eye out for that. Congregate, Concastiverse, and Convergence is what all I've mentioned this on this con report. So this is a very con-heavy con report. But they're all very different, but very cool. So I hope you guys check those out. If there's a con that you want us to promote, please reach out to us. And if there's a con that you want to report on that you had a good time at, please contact us. We love talking about cons.
Well, before we're out of here, though, and we go talk to our special guest after this, we do have an announcement that our friends over at Dad's Garage are offering 2 free passes for either June 17th or the 18th for a free show. So that's 2 sets of 2 tickets. So if anyone's interested, Scott Addist is going to be joining Dodge Garage using the Gang of Idiots for some improv shows. He was, you might know him from 30 Rock, but he was also Baymax in Big Hero 6. And so he has also been working with Second City and a lot of other improv. And so, you know, it's always great to see, you know, their guests come and you get to go see it for free thanks to ESO. So if you are interested in those passes, please, please write me at esopodcast@gmail.com and we can get those to you and we'll get your name on the list.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for Dad's Garage for reaching out like that. They are a great venue. We've both Mike and I have been there a few times. They're in a new venue now, actually.
Yep. They have their own theater there, now.
Yeah. So it's not a garage. It's actually quite nicer, but there's some funny stuff there. So if you're in the mood for a laugh and a good time, definitely check them out and reach out to us because we can hook you up.
Well, before we get out of here, we have friend of the show, Michael Day, back with us. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
It's awesome to have you back. And you are once again involved with another Trek-related event, I understand.
Yes, I am. It's Potemkin Pictures. They were based out of Albany, Georgia, but they actually moved to outside of Birmingham, Alabama, and they are going to be having an open house of their new sets that they have built in outside of Birmingham in Pelham, Alabama.
Awesome. And so these are sets, active sets that they're using I know it's kind of sensitive right now, but I think we're allowed to call them fan films, right?
Yes, as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Exactly. And this era of Star Trek is a little different than ones that we've seen before, correct?
Yes, this is in the movie era. So these are basically movie era type sets. They're filming right now 3 new series. They are working on a 4th one to shoot off pretty soon. They're closing out their original series that they started out with several years ago, Project Potemkin. It's got 2-3 more episodes left to release, and then that series is finished.
Okay. Now, I'm not as familiar with the Potemkin series. What you said it takes place in the movie era, but
yes,
what is it?
Correct.
Obviously, it involves a starship named the Potemkin.
Correct. And their adventures in the world of Star Trek, with, you know, new ships, new crews, new adventures, similar to other shows that I have been involved with.
So they have active, has anything that they've done been released yet?
Yes, they have 3 seasons of Project Potemkin out. Their 4th season, as I said, is halfway done.
Nice.
One of the new shows, Starship Tristan, has 2 episodes out. They also have Starship Deimos, which has 2 episodes out already. And then they have a Klingon-based series, which is kind of cool. Battlecruiser Kupok, which has 2 episodes out.
Awesome. So yeah, they've been around. They're not new to this. That's awesome.
No, they're not new to this. No, they, as I said, they've been winding down their old series, and when they moved, Randy Landers, who's the executive producer of all the series, decided he was going to start several new ones, and you know, get more people involved and more fun.
Awesome. And it's great that that they're having an event such as this where folks can come and check out the sets and tour the sets.
Yes. This is actually their 3rd open house. They had 2 previous open houses when they were in Albany, Georgia.
Okay.
But this will be their 1st one in their new location in Pelham, Alabama.
Gotcha. And this is on Saturday, June 25th. It's from 9 to 5 p.m. And it's completely free.
Completely free. Yes.
So that is awesome because we know from past experience and being on any set, you know, whether it's Star Trek or not, being on any active set, there's just a vibe there that you feel, and it's a pretty cool experience just to see how that works, that behind the scenes works, and talk to the people who are making these things, because I'm assuming that a lot of them will be there as well on hand to talk about the process.
Correct. A lot of the cast members from all the series will be there to talk to, and they can give you more details about their characters and, you know, how they got in, et cetera, et cetera. It's just going to be a very, very low-key event. You know, walk around the sets, talk to the cast, and some more events may be planned. They just haven't been finalized yet.
Sure. And and Pelham is near Birmingham. Is that correct?
Correct. It's I believe it's like south of Birmingham, Alabama. The actual address where the studio is located is 1814 Tecumseh Circle in Pelham, Alabama. If you want more information, you can go to the main webpage, which is PotemkinPictures.com. That's PotemkinPictures.com. And you can access all the series from there.
Awesome.
So you can take a look at what's available and what's out and, you know, kind of get a little feel and see if you'd like to come to the open house.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely more information. We'll have a link to it on our show notes. And obviously, welcome to post on our Facebook page as well. There's a lot of our listeners are in the Southeast area, so it shouldn't take them any time to get there and check it out.
I don't think Atlanta is too far away from it. I'm not too sure.
No, I think this is under 3 hours, Mike.
From Atlanta, it's not even. It's maybe 2-2.5 hours at the most.
Yeah, there you go. So
that's doable.
Absolutely.
And remember, you have the time zone change in your favor too.
That's true. Yeah. We should point out that this is open 9 to 5 and that's Central Time, right?
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah. So you might want to plan accordingly. And did we mention it's free?
Free, 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 free.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Michael, I'm glad that you came back to let us know about this. And I'm glad you're still involved with this kind of stuff, because it really is very exciting for people. You know, I even on the scale that it's not, you know, the it's not a network show, or it's not a movie, they still operate the same way. There's certain things that still apply. And I think, like I said, just going to these sets that, you know, are being used for something, there's some magic there. There's some buzz there.
Yes, very true.
So, very cool. I'm eager to see what the sets look like. I don't know if I'll get a chance to go there, because as we've talked before, and as I mentioned just a little while ago in the Con report, that we've already committed to Con K that weekend. But for those people who are into Doctor Who as well, I mean, this is not terribly far from Huntsville. So if you want to do like a day trip, you know, go to see the set, the Potemkin sets, and then go to Con K, it definitely can be worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely encourage that. So anything else we should know about the event, Mike?
It's free.
I think we've covered that. It is free. So no other excuses, right?
Correct.
Absolutely. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for coming back. And yes, we look forward to having you again.
Oh, you probably will. So
awesome.
All right, that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. Whew, this was a full one, but I want to thank our cast for joining us and our guests, of course. First, Sean, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yes, actually, the second episode of the Death Podcast from deathpod.com, DETH. PAW, Death is in Megadeth, will actually be released soon, starring Ricky, Bambi, and Jazz of the Possum Kingdom Ramblers, with a guest appearance by one Mr. Hallie Mike Gordon.
He goes on anyone's podcast. That's awesome.
And you know, there was Taco Bell involved. So,
oh, well, that's even better.
It will be the finest podcast you will hear this year, recorded in a Taco Bell, talking about folk music. So that will go out probably Monday following the release of this one. So, in about a week or so, I'd say.
Sounds perfect, sir. And of course, Tacoma. Thank you, dear.
You are most welcome. The only thing I really wanted to shout out about was you all, actually, is the ESO DragonCon Con report. The last month's segment about diversity in cosplay and gender in cosplay for, the 2 months running. There are two things that I'm extremely passionate about, and I'm very, very thankful to be on the show with you guys. So thank you guys for having me yet again, and listening to me ramble and about random things.
We've actually been getting a lot of great feedback about that segment, so good job on it.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. Yay.
So, of course, the Phantom Troublemaker. Sir, it has been too long to have you on the show.
It has. I need to get back on sooner than later. And since I already put over needlessthingsite.com and patreon.com/phantomtroublemaker, I want to give a shout out to Jeff Johns for writing DC Comics Rebirth #1, or DC Universe Rebirth rather. It was fantastic. It got me enthusiastic for DC Comics once again, which I have not been in several years now, aside from a title here and there. I hope that DC is ready to fulfill the promise that Jeff Johns made with that comic. But that is one of the best and most exciting single issues I've ever read. So taken on its own, good job. I'm amazed.
That is awesome. It was a great read. And Mike and I actually talked about it at the beginning of last week's episode in our Rants and Raves. So if you want to go back and listen, folks, it is definitely worth listening to. And of course, I think they're on the third printing already at the comic shops.
Yeah, so, now they're charging $6 for it.
Oh, yes, they are.
So yeah, it's definitely worth a good read though. And it sets so many good precedences, and I hope DC lives up to it. And of course, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about?
I do. We have to have a shout out to our wonderful, now double award-winning Artist of the Year. He got the Rondo Award again for Artist of the Year, Mark Maddox. I'm so proud of him. I'm so happy that his talent's being recognized. It's a heck of an award. He's going to have a bunch of more. I'm sure his shelf is just going to be full of those little Rondo heads. It's a kind of an interesting looking award in and of itself. But
they kind of stare at you. It's kind of creepy.
I know it is kind of creepy. But you know what? As creepy as it is, I mean, it's fitting for Mark and what he draws and what he paints, really.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Mark's creepy or something.
And we all know Mark's a little creepy. I mean, it's no accident that he's on all of our October episodes because he is creepy. So, but in all seriousness, I mean, I can't think of a more deserving honor than for him, because you know, he works his ass off. I mean, he really does. I mean, every time we're talking to him, he's got like three different things that he's doing, so he's constantly busy, and yet the output is astounding. Every time he comes out with a new piece on Facebook, he puts it out there, and I just look at it and go, oh my god, that's gorgeous.
He just gets better and better, and he does not know how good he is. That's the sad thing.
I mean, we know him personally because he's always stressing about stuff.
He knows a little bit because there's a very specific piece of art that one day I will have commissioned, but I cannot possibly afford to commission him to do it, but he's the only one that can do it.
Wow.
So he knows a little bit how good he is.
Yeah.
Well, he does. And you know what? I definitely am honored that he has graced so many of the new Legend books with his covers, the upcoming Strong Will, last year's ESO anthology, and there will be more to come. We've been talking about doing some other work together. So working with him is a real treat as well. So
awesome. Definitely agree. Congrats, Mark. We do, you know, wish you always the best, and you'll be on the show soon. It's hard to keep him away sometimes.
Yes, that's true.
He'd probably still be talking about turtles for the next 2 hours if he was on this one. Okay, I got a shout out real quick. As everyone knows, I am a huge music fan. And we actually, this last Saturday, got to go to the Fox Theater and we got to see Prairie Home Companion. Most people know it through the NPR show or through the movie. And Garrison Keillor, for those who don't know, is retiring. And he has been doing the show for over 40 years. And just the numbers of doing a weekly show is just amazing. Hell, we've done it for over 6 years.
I was going to say, like, yeah, we don't know anything about how hard it is to put a show on every week.
Yeah, no, we don't know. But for us, it's just you and I speaking. These are, you know, they have to juggle musicians. They have to juggle, you know, celebrities, comedians, you know, of backup band
and jugglers.
Yeah, exactly. It's an entertainment show. It literally is. And it is just amazing. And Garrison is retiring in October. So this is his final tour with Prairie Home Companion. And so Judy and I finally went to go see him. And it was amazing. And I just wanted to, from the bottom of my heart, thank Garrison Keillor for everything he's done. And Prairie Home Companion isn't going away by any means. It's continuing, but Chris Thiel of the Punch Brothers and Nickel Creek is taking over for him. And so it should be a different show, but it's going to be neat to see where it goes from here. So just wanted to do that quick shout out. And of course, we want to hear from you at home. We are going to, you know, talk all about, you know, turtles till our voices are blue in our faces. So we are going to be talking all about it. And, you know, please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057 and talk about turtles. You leave us a message, write us about it. What's your memories on it? When did you first start hearing about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? And did you dare go see the Michael Bay movie? I'm sorry if you did or not.
Ugh.
Of course, you could help support.
You knew what you were doing.
Of course, you could. That is funny, sir. You got me there.
Sorry.
That's okay. Sorry. I wasn't expecting that.
That totally derailed it. That was not it.
They knew what they were doing.
Bastards!
No sympathy.
Yeah. Of course, the show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com store, where you can find all kinds of cool merchandise, including some of the movies and the comics and such for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But if you don't want to go to the ESO store, still go to our website, ESOpodcast.com, and you can click right on the top. There's an Amazon link. And if you bookmark that link, every time you use that bookmark, we still get credit for it. And you could shop to your heart's delight. It's summertime. It's hot. It's humid. It's yuck. You could buy sunscreen. You could buy tiki torches for your porch. You can actually buy a Hawaiian shirt. Heck, you could even buy a copy of the ESO book up there. So you could buy anything you want to have your summer fly by, and we get the credit. And that keeps the oxygen on the station. And that'll make Tacoma happy because she's going to be stuck up here for a while.
Yep. Oh, gosh.
I'm tying her.
So, you know, she's made it to a week already. We're going to see how she does by next time the Dragon Con report comes about. And speaking of coming about, the new Dragon Con report is out now, so you can hear that. And also, we have the newest episode of Earth Station Who, where you can hear Earth Station Who live from Timegate, where we talk about death and life in the Stephen Moffat era. It was actually a lot of fun, and we actually had Gary Mitchell and Drew Meyer sitting in with us, so it was actually fun to hear him and them rant. And join us here next week when we are going back to look at Comic Artist Spotlight, and we are going to be looking at one of my favorites. We are going to be looking at George Perez, and he is just amazing. And he came out of actually about the same era as the Turtles, maybe a little bit earlier, but whole different style, and his work is some of the most iconic pictures you've seen in movies and comics. It's, we talked about Mark Maddox being a great artist. George is just up there with Mark, and maybe some ways just slightly a little bit better, but Mark is going to be even bigger, so that's a whole different story. So we're going to be talking all about George next week. It should be a lot of fun. Thank you much for joining us this week. My name is Mike Faber, and we will talk to you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness, and if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is ESOPodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Earth Station 1.
Hi, bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.